Repair Show, starring Jim Bevka. Maybe your mother told you never talk politics and religion in polite company. Well, Jim Bevka's mother never told him that. So come on, enjoy the forbidden pleasure. You can participate in the conversation at 1-800-259-9231. Today's show is sponsored by Gun Owners of America, gunowners.org. And now, here's Jim.
Well, you've been waiting all week for it. Another episode of the Cult Repair Show. I'm your host, Jim Bevka. Glad to be here with you. Sorry to keep you waiting. You know, I feel like I've said everything I want to say about Harriet Myers. I'm all done with that. I mean, I think she's going to go down to defeat anyway. She's probably I think right now the Bush administration is going to withdraw the nomination, and it'll probably be a scenario where she'll come out and say, you know, that she felt for some personal reason that she needed to back out. There's interesting things coming up about her relationships, her political relationships and payoffs and things in Texas. The questionnaire that she answered for the U.S. Senate was an absolute embarrassment to her. One commentator that said a first-year law student could have done better. So we're done with Harriet Myers, except to remind everyone that George W. Bush picked a friend. He wasn't concerned with whether or not he was picking someone with a pro-life track record. And if that was the thing, it was the reason that you voted for Bush. It was the reason that you had to choose Bush over Kerry, who wasn't a good choice either. You no longer have that excuse. Now, the Republican Party did another major compromise job this week. They managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. I'm going to talk about that in a rather long GOA update I'm going to do a little bit later in the show. Gun Owners Update. There was a bill that passed this week, and it was in direct contradiction to a update I gave you last week. I mean, the whole situation changed, and we'll talk about that. But I want you to call. You know, when you sit here and you do the radio show and you don't get callers, as I haven't for the last couple of weeks, you begin to wonder who all's listening. We've had controversial topics. We've discussed some very difficult issues. And you've been given some excellent commentary by your host. And I have offered to bribe you to call. And this is probably the final week I'm going to be making this particular offer, which is my CD, Why Conservative Christians Are Reevaluating George W. Bush. The surprising insights more and more Christians are having, and no, they're not deciding to vote Democrat. Now, if you're listening right now on the internet, you just heard what I said 2 minutes ago, and so you're already behind the game. You've got to get on the phone at 1-800-259-9231 as quickly as possible so that you can be on the show. The show's only an hour long. And both of the last 2 weeks that I've made this offer, someone has contacted me at the end of or immediately following the show wanting to get a copy of the CD. I'm not going to give any of these away. We've only got a handful of them left, and we're going to be closing the culturerepair.com store down. You can get the CDs there for $4 a piece. I'm practically giving them away. That's shipping, tax, everything there included. Or you can get a six-pack of them for $8. I'll be happy to give you one for free if you participate in today's show. You have a good question. You come on and have a conversation with me. 1-800-259-9231. And I'm so generous that I will even do the same thing for you if you email at comments, that's comments plural, comments@downsizeddc.org, you give me your question or comment, and if I use it on the air today, I will also give that to you. But I'm going to give you a choice today, because I have something else that I have sitting around here that needed to be closed out a long time ago. How to Persuade Your Friends and Family Guns Save Lives and Reduce Crime. This is a booklet I wrote for the American Liberty Foundation back in 2002. It's short and to the point, but it's just chock full of facts. It has a ton of footnotes in it. Endnotes, actually, is what we call them, 42 of them. And that's over 33 pages, and these pages are about half the width of a normal page. It fits in a standard business-size envelope, and we will be happy to send this to you. These were sold for $4.95 plus shipping back in 2002. So you could get a copy of How to Persuade Your Friends and Family, Guns Save Lives and Reduce Crime by yours truly, Jim Bevka. I will be willing to give you one or the other if you call 1-800-259-9231 or email me at comments@downsizeddc.org and I use your question on the show. I won't be giving these away just out of the goodness of my heart. I've only got a handful of these left, and so I'm doing it to induce people to make calls to the show today, and we're ready to hear from you. I want to talk about Congress and budget cutting. Report today and by Knight Ridder newspapers indicating that this is apparently a lot harder for them, for Congress, than they thought it would be. They're finding it impossible to make cuts. They just can't find the places to make the cuts. This story is more incredible than the buildup I'm giving it here. You're going to want to stay tuned and get a hold of that as well. And we're going to have a war update in the show as well. We want to continue to chronicle the Bush lies. We want to talk about just the fact that they can't tell the truth and the death and destruction that results from that. But first, I want to start off. I want to be just a wee bit conspiratorial. A piece from the from Slate's online magazine by Jack Schaefer, called "The Exorcism of the New York Times." In the name of journalism, the paper must cast out unclean spirits, says Jack Schaefer. And it's about the ongoing Judith Miller scandal, which I find, all of a sudden, I find very interesting. Judith Miller was looked upon as a kind of a journalistic hero. It was kind of universal within the journalistic community that, you know, by going to jail for 85 days to protect her source, she was a true heroine, someone that they could all admire. In fact, they were almost jealous that they weren't getting the opportunity to go to jail. Judith Miller is a reporter with the New York Times who did a great deal of reporting leading up to the Gulf War, the second Gulf War, the war with Iraq. Miller, according to Schaefer, he chronicles some of what's going on at the New York Times. You know, they've had some other disasters in recent year with Jason Blair's journalistic malfeasance, as Schaefer put it. You know, he was the one that invented the quotes and the sources for his stories, and he had to leave in disgrace. And the Wen-Ho Lee investigation, they also botched up, and they had to do some mea culpas in this. But they've done some mini culpas as well, because the New York Times was a prime source for stories about weapons of mass destruction in Iraq previous to the March 2003 invasion of Iraq. Miller's work has continued to haunt the New York Times 2.5 years after her Iraq work was widely discredited, because the paper has yet to document how she botched the story of the decade and cataloged the role she played in the current White House imbroglio. The Times pointed to Miller's work in its May 26, 2004 mini-culpa about its Iraq reportorial failings. And yes, the paper effectively ended Miller's career as a serious journalist last Sunday by portraying her as a newsroom loon and weapons-grade egomaniac. Assisting the paper in that assessment was Miller herself, whose accompanying first-person account described how she clawed her way into the Alexandria Detention Center and wimped her way out 85 days later. You know, one of the things that's really stunning about this is that Miller didn't have to go to jail, from what it's... I mean, if I'm understanding the stories that are coming out correctly, Miller did not have to go to jail. She wanted to go to jail. She wanted to draw attention to herself. And the reason she didn't was because her source, her secret source, which kind of everybody kind of assumed was Scooter Libby, and that's who it turned out to be, had apparently given her permission to come out a year before. But it took her going to jail and having him issue her permission one more time for her to actually take him up on it. She decided she didn't really like it there very much and left after 85 days. The Times won't break free of Miller's malevolent spirit until the paper commissions an exorcism in print akin to the ones it conducted following the Blair and Lee possessions. Jack Schaefer says he's been calling for one since July of 2003, damning Miller for her credulous and slapdash weapons of mass destruction reporting in the Times. Now, I'll document some of that when we come back from the break, and I'll share with you an interesting insight, something that, I haven't heard anybody else in this network pick on, and so I'm going to have a lead on at least one conspiratorial item here. 1-800-259-9231. If you're an internet political activist, pay close attention. The Federal Election Commission, FEC for short, is about to make your life difficult. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org. Last September, a federal judge ruled, quote, "To permit an entire class of political communications to be unregulated would permit an evasion of campaign finance laws." That means if you forward a campaign press release using an email list, post a campaign ad on your blog, or link to a candidate's website from your homepage, then you may well be required to register with the government and file complicated reports. You'll probably need a lawyer, too. And what the FEC won't tell you is that none of these rules will apply to MSNBC or the New York Times website. This shouldn't happen in America. You have First Amendment rights. Visit DownsizeDC.org to free the Internet. A one-sentence law can stop this unconstitutional insanity. That's DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Hour here on the Culture Repair Show, 1-800-259-9231, or email me at comments@downsizedc.org. If you get on the show, if your question gets on the show, I'm willing to give you your choice of why conservative Christians are reevaluating George W. Bush, the surprising insights more and more Christians are having, and no, they're not deciding to vote Democrat. They won't be available for sale much longer at the Culture Repair website. It is going to close this month, and most likely it's going to be this week that we will be shutting that website down. And I have a couple copies left of How to Persuade Your Friends and Family, Guns Save Lives and Reduce Crime. Now, I can tell you a dramatic story of a man from New Hampshire who obtained a copy of this book, shared the details of it with his mother, who was very, very concerned about the fact that he owned guns. He was in his early 20s at the time, and his mother went from being a gun control advocate to being a gun rights supporter as a result of reading this Instant Experts report, which includes more than 42 footnotes. It's a very short report. You can sit down and read this thing in about a little under an hour. So I would highly recommend it. It's just jam-packed. But I've only got a couple of these left. We no longer have any use for them at the foundation, back from the old days of the American Liberty Foundation. And so we have a few of these available for closeout. And so I will be happy to let you take your pick of either the CD or the booklet. And the booklet, we've only got a couple copies of it left. So you literally, if you want to get one, you have to order it. You have to get on the show today. Again, 1-800-259-9231, or email me at comments@downsizedc.org. And if we use your question, the same deal applies. And we were talking when we went into the break about a Jack Schaefer column in Slate, about the New York Times, and about Judith Miller in particular. We'll pick up where we left off. Proof that Miller never played solo on the Iraq topic for the Times resides in at least four non-Miller stories published in the war's run-up that glower with skepticism about the administration's case and methods. Likewise, in the post-invasion period running up, right up to the date of the paper's May 26, 2004 mini-culpa, the Times published at least eight corrected pieces by reporters Doug Gell, James Reason, and others about intelligence weapons and dubious defectors. What the paper never did, even in its mini-culpa, was to account for how Miss Runamuck, that's Miller's pet name for herself, by the way, consistently snaked her bogus stories into the Times before and after the invasion. Okay? Here's some of the stories. December 20, 2001. The title of the piece was An Iraqi Defector Tells of Work on at least 20 Hidden Weapon Sites. With the July 9, compare that with the July 9, 2004 piece, Defector's Reports on Iraqi Arms Were Embellished, Exile Asserts. And there's just story after story after story. December 3rd, 2002, CIA hunts Iraq tied to Soviet smallpox, in which she advanced the idea that Iraq had worked with Russia in weaponizing smallpox. As best as anyone can determine, the paper never interrogated the famous Iraqi in a baseball cap, who pointed to an alleged cache of WMD precursor chemicals from Miller and a squad of U.S. military WMD hunters, Met Alpha, in her April 21, 2003 blockbuster, Illicit Arms Kept Till Eve of War, an Iraqi scientist is said to assert. She published another shocking piece that the Times has never refuted. November 12, 2002, Iraq said to try to buy antidote against nerve gas. This was anonymously sourced to, quote, senior Bush administration officials, end quote. The piece appears to have been based on pure bunk. It goes on and on. It's clear that she was there. The New York Times is one of the most respected, quote unquote, it's an establishment newspaper. It's the establishment newspaper. And Judith Miller had access to this and was putting out stories that weren't true. She was taking the word of people in the government. She was not doing true investigative journalism, publishing these stories. And some of them she was sharing things that shouldn't have been able to get out via national security. Clearly, she had a source that was leaking what was supposed to be sensitive data to her. Now, my point is that these sources wanted this data leaked. They wanted to persuade the American people in the build-up to the war that indeed there were weapons of mass destruction and that all kinds of bad things were going to happen if we didn't preempt entering the preemptive war against Saddam Hussein and the nation of Iraq. We had to go to war on the possibility. You can remember George Bush standing up and giving a speech in Cincinnati, Ohio, talking about a softball size of uranium being enough to put a mushroom cloud over a major American city. Well, the problem with that was that a softball size of highly enriched uranium is very hard to come by. And there was absolutely no evidence whatsoever. It was total conjecture. It was a hypothetical of a hypothetical that Iraq had that ability. Now, were they attempting to get that ability? Well, that was something at the time that was somewhat debatable. Wasn't completely undebatable. And I'm not just talking out the hole in my head here. We documented it at truthaboutwar.org. Our team did that work, truthaboutwar.org, in the days leading up to the Iraqi invasion. And we published our site in early February of 2003 to say, hey, hold the phone. The evidence isn't there. Judith Miller, who works for the most prestigious journalistic enterprise in the United States, she's got a plum position here, is incapable with all the resources and full-time devotion that she and others are able to give to the cause to do as good a job as a couple of guys in a basement in Alexandria, Virginia, with a budget of less than $10,000. And our work has stood the test of time. It's still there. After you get past the flash page on the site, you can read the rest of the site and you can see what we said. We froze everything but the flash page on the site the day the shooting started in Iraq. Now, I think there's a conspiratorial angle here, and I want to hasten back to a personal conversation I had with a Mr. David Franke. Now, that name is not going to be a household name to most people, but he was one of the co-founders of the Young Americans for Freedom in the late 1950s. It was a precursor to the Goldwater campaign and a lot of conservative movement organizations that exist even to this day. He was there with William F. Buckley and a handful of others at the time, Richard Viguerie. They helped form the Young Americans for Freedom. A lot of people don't realize that within conservative Republican circles at that time, there were two camps. There were I'm going to call them the National Review camp on one side, and then there was the Libertarian camp. And the National Review camp was very anti-communist and felt that they had to do whatever it took to defeat communism. And the libertarian side thought that communism was a specter. It was being built up much larger, like we just saw here with Iraq, than it really was, in order to help the military-industrial complex. The libertarians believed small government across the board, and that included a smaller national defense and national security apparatus than the National Review crowd wanted. Well, the National Review crowd went on to great success and was able to even elect a president. And eventually, I would even argue, a Congress, even though that Congress hasn't been the least bit conservative. And the libertarians were relegated to virtual obscurity over this issue. David Franke pointed out to me that, looking back in hindsight now, 40 years later, 45 years later, he thinks that the libertarians at the time had it right. He agrees more with their approach. And one of the things that he noted that the conservative movement, I said, why has the conservative movement become co-opted or seem to have failed so badly? And he said, well, he gave me several factors, but one of them was, he said, we shouldn't underestimate the degree to which the CIA, and he wasn't trying to be at least a bit conspiratorial here, he said a lot of this is documented, and he started giving me sources at the time during that conversation of how much the CIA had infiltrated student groups, campus organizations, academia, and even the media. But when we come back, I'm going to tie Judith Miller with this David Franke theory about the CIA and offer a new speculation that I haven't heard offered anywhere else. So you're going to want to stay tuned, and you're also going to want to call 1-800-259-9231. Several days after the Patriot Act was passed, a printed version was made available for Congress to read. Yes, I said several days after the Patriot Act was passed. But that's not unusual. Congress routinely passes bills that has little or no time to read. I'm Jim Babka with DownsizeDC.org, and I say it's time for a new American revolution with the slogan, No Legislation Without Representation. Congress cannot claim to be representing us when they don't know what's in the bills they pass. They shouldn't take the words of lobbyists. They shouldn't rely on unelected staff. And they shouldn't take orders from the party leadership because, after all, they're supposed to represent you. At DownsizeDC.org, you'll find a bill that should be the law of the land. It's called the Read the Bills Act. You can read it at our website, DownsizeDC.org. Better yet, you can use our simple system to tell your elected representatives to sponsor the Read the Bills Act. Write it down, DownsizeDC.org.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
It's the third segment of the Culture Repair Show. We're only here for an hour. That means we've only got a couple more segments, and they get shorter as they go, so you're running out of opportunities to get on the show. 1-800-259-9231. Let me say that real slow so you can get that down. 1-800-259-9231. Or you can email me at comments@downsizedc.org. And if you have a good question and you get on the show here, either way, why conservative Christians are reevaluating George W. Bush. Sometimes I only make this look easy, and then other times like that I don't. Why conservative Christians are reevaluating George W. Bush, the surprising insights more and more Christians are having, and no, they're not deciding to vote Democrat. The CD was done last year before the election. It's a year old now, and I feel it's very dated, but we're going to be closing the culturerepair.com website down temporarily for a new focus on Downsize DC, which is my day job. If you don't want that CD, if you would prefer, we've got a couple copies left, and only a couple, of How to Persuade Your Friends and Family, Guns Save Lives and Reduce Crime by Jim Babka. This is a booklet, and it's well-documented. It's a great little tool, and we've seen success with this in converting people to the idea that the guns do save lives and reduce crime. It was part of our Armed and Secure project. So if you're interested in that, you can get either one of those if you get in on the show today, 1-800-259-9231. We're going to get in a moment to the GOA update because we had an interesting reversal occur there. And I want to talk, before the show's over, I definitely want to get to Congress not being able to find something to cut in the budget. But let me conclude the point that I was making about Judith Miller here. And I don't believe you've heard this on any other show. I believe this is an original insight that you're only hearing here. But I sure hope, you know, Alex, if you're listening right now, I hope you'll pick this up and look into it. David Franke, who was involved in the founding of the Young Americans for Freedom, said that he had decided the libertarian wing of the conservative movement was right, that the threat of communism was overestimated. Now, there was some problem with communists in the government, he said, but the overall threat of it was overestimated, and the economic analysis of how well the Soviet Union was doing by the CIA was flawed. And he said, you know, I asked him, why did the conservative movement seem to be co-opted? Why was it moving towards growing government? Now, David Franke went to a conservative party, and I got to meet him. And at the party, of course, almost everybody there is a huge George Bush fan, just, you know, eager to see him elected. And this was in September of 2004. And he was saying that he was going to vote for Kerry. And he was doing it out of a sense of irony. He had written a piece that had been published far and wide. In fact, if you do a search on David Franke, his last name is Frank with an E at the end, you could probably still find this article. I believe it was published on Lou Rockwell, arguing the case for divided government, that government would actually be smaller. We were actually better off when we had one party in control of one end of Pennsylvania Avenue and the other party in control of the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. We had gridlock and government grew slower. And the facts seemed to be bearing him out. But David Franke pointed out that one of the things that he felt had gone wrong, he had a few items, but one of them that he felt had gone wrong was that the CIA had infiltrated a wide variety of organizations. The CIA existed because of this desire to pursue communism so hard. That's what created this structure and led to it. And they had begun infiltrating all aspects of American life, and that included the media. I don't know. I have no evidence, so I'm not making a charge here. But I'm wondering aloud whether or not Judith Miller was a CIA plant. whether she was a CIA, they call it an asset. That was the word I was looking for. Whether or not she was a CIA asset. The amount of material that she helped her newspaper generate that has since been proven to be blatantly wrong, blatantly false, blatantly misleading the American public, whether she knew it or not, would seem to suggest that she was a CIA asset. And how many CIA assets are there in the institutional media? I don't know. And I don't know whether she was for sure. I want to emphasize here, I have no evidence to say this, and I'm not saying she is. I just wonder aloud whether or not that was the case. Let's go to something that's equally, in my opinion, interesting, and that is our GOA update. This show is graciously sponsored by Gun Owners of America, www.gunowners.org, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. In no week that I have said that phrase, does that mean more than now? Last week, I was pleased to come to you and report that the fight over the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, which was a bill designed to protect gun manufacturers from frivolous lawsuits by major municipalities, was put on hold until 2006. Sometime in 2006, they would have to rejoin the battle again, and we'll recount what that was all about here. As I'm going to share with you Larry Pratt's Thursday, October 20th message to his supporters at Gun Owners of America. But it's interesting. The Republican leadership called off the dogs, wanted GOA to go home, stop worrying. Then Monday, they yanked the rug. Thursday last week, Larry issued the message. I read the message here on the Sunday show. Monday, the Rules Committee met and decided they were going to go ahead with S-397, and on Wednesday, they voted it through. Bam, just like that. And we pointed out at downsizedc.org that this could not, would not, should not have happened and wouldn't have been able to if the Read the Bills Act was law. So I encourage you to go to downsizedc.org right now and sign up and send a message to your congressman. They would have had a 7-day waiting period on this. It would have been a final reading of the bill required, and we all would have known where they were going by that point. Here's the message, and we're going to carry right into the break and bring this up on the other side of the break because the message is rather long, but I want to share the majority of it with you. The anti-gun provisions in S-397 would probably be stripped out in the House if all the gun groups were working together with GOA. That was a quote from Representative Ron Paul on September 15th. And it's a shame, really. Representative Paul is totally correct. Working united, we could have encouraged the House leadership to bring up a clean bill. H.R. 800, the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act, garnered well over 250 co-sponsors and would have passed the House easily if the leadership had brought up this bill rather than its Senate counterpart, S-397. Unfortunately, GOA was the only national group that was not calling for the passage of the Senate bill, which contained new gun control, and likewise, GOA was the only national group that was pressing for passage of the clean bill, H.R. 800. I came across an article in the Libertarian Enterprise back in August titled, "Is the NRA a Second Branch of Gun Control Incorporated?" And one has to wonder when you see that they're sponsoring and they're compromising when there's no need to. Let me go on here. The House today passed Senate 397 and sent it to the President because he has promised to sign this legislation. It is all the more tragic that House and Senate leaders refused to send him a clean bill. First, the bad news. As we mentioned before, S-397 imposes a mandatory gun tax by forcing every gun buyer to purchase a trigger lock and takes us to the verge of mandatory trigger lock usage. The bill provides immunity from lawsuits for those who use trigger locks, but there is no such immunity for gun owners who keep a firearm available for self-defense without a trigger lock, so it doesn't protect those of you that don't use trigger locks. The push towards trigger locks may very well follow the push for mandatory seatbelts and motorcycle helmets, and if our country ever takes that next step and straps every gun owner with California-style lock-up-your-safety legislation, then we will need to remember this day as the day that laid the foundation. When I get back, I'm going to tell you the story about why gun locks are bad. It's the story of Mary Carpenter. You'll want to stay tuned.
Yeah. Larry Pratt's latest book is now available. On the Firing Line, Essays in the Defense of Liberty can be purchased from Gun Owners of America for only $18 plus shipping and handling. On the Firing Line is a collection of essays that GOA's Executive Director Larry Pratt has written over the last few years. They were composed in the battle to defend the right to keep and bear arms, as well as the rest of our liberties protected in the Bill of Rights. Pratt has taken on the arguments used by the enemies of freedom who would disarm and subjugate Americans. Pratt shows that the debate transcends firearms because the debate is really about control. Who will control the lives of private citizens? Will it be each person individually, or will it be the government? You can order your copy of On the Firing Line by going to the GOA website at gunowners.org. Or you can call GOA's toll-free number 1-888-886-GUNS. That's 888-886-GUNS. You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Still doing the GOA update here, and you know, there might have been some tendency to say that, you know, Larry Pratt and Gun Owners of America were overreacting. This is a perfectly good bill. The rest of the so-called Second Amendment defenders were totally satisfied with the Senate version of the bill, even though it included these provisions. But Larry Pratt keeps in mind the story of Mary Carpenter. Let me pick up where I left off in his report. Mary Carpenter certainly will remember. She is the grandmother who has had to live with the fact the two of her grandchildren were killed in 2000 because no one in the house could get to the family weapons to protect themselves against the pitchfork-wielding thug. People in the home had been trained with firearms and knew how to use them, but the guns were locked up in compliance with California state law. Those people in the home, by the way, happened to be juveniles. There was a 14-year-old girl that wasn't able to save her siblings. Another amendment was passed as part of S-397 would give impetus to adopting a penetration standard for armor-piercing bullets by commissioning a Justice Department study of the issue. Now, this penetration standard, if it were adopted, a gun-adverse administration, a gun control administration, could probably use it to ban virtually all ammunition. The Senate passed its gun control-laden version as Congress was ready to go out for their summer recess. At that time, Representative Marilyn Musgrave's office had promised to mobilize pro-gun members in the House to oppose the Senate version by asking them to join her in approaching the leadership in favor of H.R. 800. The Musgrave-led effort would have made a great difference, but unfortunately, she decided to do nothing. S-397, gun locks and all, carried the day. But there is good news. GOA is glad that Congress has passed legislation that is designed to stop predatory lawsuits designed to destroy the gun industry. That much is very good, and GOA supports it 100%. GOA hopes that the law accomplishes what its sponsors intended. Also, GOA would be remiss if we failed to mention that there was at least one silver lining in this entire ordeal. Don't forget that your hard work, GOA supporters, killed the Feinstein semi-auto ban this past summer. He goes on to tell a story of how the Senator Feinstein was attempting to get an amendment in the bill, and they got Bill Frist, after he initially refused to do it, to fill the amendment tree so that the amendment could have been introduced. To give you an idea of how dramatic this was, Harry Reid, the minority leader in the Senate, complained. He said, I quote, I have nothing in my memory that has ever been done this before. That is immediately going to a bill and filling the tree so no other amendments can be offered. I have never, ever known him to do this. It is so unusual. It is not in keeping with how he has done business here during his tenure as majority leader. While filling the tree is within the rules, it is done very rarely. So GOA supporters should take heart. That victory was entirely theirs. Now, Larry closes by explaining why remaining no compromise is always the right thing to do, and pointing out that some people have faulted them for that. He says, please realize that this underestimates your collective power. It ignores the power of the grassroots. Remember, GOA was also told that blocking the Feinstein ban couldn't be done through parliamentary procedures. But together, we convinced the Senate Majority Leader. Second, as a pragmatic matter, the desire to compromise ignores one simple fact. We could have easily won this battle to pass a clean bill in Congress. They had a filibuster-proof majority of senators who sponsored the bill before it had trigger locks in it. A supermajority of representatives had co-sponsored H.R. 800, a clean bill. and the president had said he would sign the bill even before the trigger locks thing was in it. So there was no reason that they couldn't have gotten this passed. So why couldn't we insist on a bill that had no trigger locks? What was the problem? Why couldn't we stare down the anti-gunners and just say, we're going to pass a clean bill because you don't have those to stop us? Early on, we had the upper hand. Why do you think that was too much to ask? Well, he speaks of the failings of appeasement and quotes Winston Churchill, who says, an appeaser is one who feeds a crocodile, hoping it will eat him last. That's the danger of compromising, and unfortunately, I'm sad to report that, you know, despite the fact that we've been updating you here on this show, and that last week we had said it was time to call off, that Congress did manage to spring this and pass a bill that was far from perfect. And this, again, was the Republican leadership letting its constituency down. Let's get to another example of the Republican leadership letting their constituency down. According to the Knight Ritter papers, Congress finds cutting budget easier said than done. There's a bridge. You may have heard of the Bridge to Nowhere in Alaska. $230 million bridge to nowhere. Stuck in a pork-filled highway bill this year. The bridge, longer than the Golden Gate, would cross from Ketchikan, population 8,000, to Gravina Island, population 50, replacing a 7-minute ferry that connects the town with the regional airport. Its main critic, Senator Tom Coburn, a Republican of Oklahoma, has argued that the bridge money is enough to buy each island residence a Learjet. Now, it's maybe a tad bit of exaggeration, but you get the idea. And Senator Ted Stevens responds, he's a Republican from Alaska, that he would, he vowed that he would resign from the Senate if fellow makers followed through on threats to cancel the spending for his bridge. Why didn't anybody take him up on this offer? He offered to resign to keep this in place. I wouldn't let the door hit him in the butt on the way out. Most Americans wouldn't. The bridge and Stevens' success in preserving it illustrates a trend in Congress where lawmakers' large spending bills with pet projects worth tens of millions of dollars. Many of them are obscure, such as $1 million to research household plants in Utah's desert climates. Many are popular with lawmakers' constituents, such as $500,000 for a sculpture park in Seattle or a museum parking lot in Omaha, Nebraska. Such earmarks, or you may know them as pork, are legion. There are some 6,300 costing roughly $22 billion, with a B. 6,300 of these costing $22 billion in this year's highway bill all by itself. We'll close this up when we come back to the other side of the break. You're listening to the Culture Repair Show. I'm your host, Jim Babka. Imagine you're on trial. The charge against you? Violating one of the hundreds of laws Congress passes each year. You rise in your defense and say, Your Honor, I didn't know about this law. How will the judge respond? I'm Jim Babka with DownsizedDC.org, and I think you know the answer. The judge will reply, Ignorance of the law is no excuse. So what's the excuse for your representatives in Congress? Their ignorance is even worse. They don't even read many of the laws they pass. At DownsizedDC.org, we're proposing a simple but powerful idea, the Read the Bills Act, to force Congress to read the laws they pass. Why? Because we believe the federal government is way too big. We want to slow the politicians down. We want to reduce the size and power of the federal government, and we want them to sweat the details, just like you do. Check out DownsizedDC.org, because ignorance is no excuse. Even for a congressman.
You're tuned in to Culture Repair with Jim Babka on the GCN Radio Network.
Ah, that drum fill is fun. I do it all here on the Culture Repair Show. We've got a question from Ken and Wendy in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And Ken and Wendy, I will email you after the show's over to see which free gift you want. They ask, do you think that Bush will let Myers go in favor of Alberto? I love torture. Bush is above the law. Gonzalez. If you think about it, it would be easier to nominate someone with no experience and then slip in Gonzalez. Well, you know, they may well do that. I don't know. I don't think the conservatives are going to be satisfied with that either, and I think the real problem that the president is experiencing here is that he has betrayed his base, and the Republicans betrayed their base, repeatedly betrayed their base. And, you know, if you believe that government should be smaller, or that you believe that the Democrats are worse on government issues than the Republicans, this administration should have been a wake-up call for you. And I think I'm actually pleased as punch that this Myers thing happened. I think it's a result of a pattern of hubris that this administration has had from the get-go. And sooner or later, they were going to step in it, and they certainly did with this nomination. So thanks for that question. When we went to the break, I said there were, just in the highway bill alone, there were 6,300 earmarks costing roughly $22 billion. Now, the pork barrel spending in Iraq and prescription drug plan for seniors and so forth led to a deficit that is now at $317 billion for fiscal 2005, which ended September 30th. House Republican leaders have conceded they didn't have the votes to slow down the growth of government by even $50 billion. They're looking to try how to offset Katrina expenses. They don't even have the votes to cut even $50 billion over 5 years. That's $10 billion a year they can't find a cut out of a $2.5 trillion budget. Now, I want to know, these parking lots and these museums and this bridge to nowhere, where do they get the constitutional authority to do this? Let me remind you what Congress is permitted to do under the Constitution. Number one, borrow money. Number two, regulate commerce among the states. Number three, regulate naturalization. Four, regulate bankruptcies. Five, coin money. Six, fix weights and standards. Seven, punish counterfeiters. Eight, establish post offices. Nine, establish post roads. 10, record patents. 11, protect copyrights. 12, create federal courts. 13, punish pirates. 14, declare war. 15, raise an army. 16, provide a navy. 17, call up the militia. 18, organize the militia. 19, make laws for Washington, D.C. And 20, make rules for the army and the navy. Now, according to the 10th Amendment, all else is controlled by the states or the people, respectively. I would like to know where Ted Stevens gets the right. Ted Stevens shouldn't resign over this bridge, over the bridge being pulled out. He should resign on principle, and so should the rest of them. They're violating their oaths of office, passing this crap. It should stop, folks. And that's why I encourage you to check out DownsizeDC.org. There, we're giving you the opportunity to communicate with your representatives and senators. Nearly 10,000 people have now joined us, and the number is growing every day. As we get bigger and stronger, they won't be able to ignore us. That's what I do at my day job. DownsizeDC.org is the website. I encourage you to check it out. Well, I look forward to being back here again with you next week. We got some very interesting things to cover. We didn't get through everything we want to do today, including the war update, so I hope you'll come back. Have a great weekend.